Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7 and Episode 100. And Dave, obviously, not even 24 hours ago, just about 4 o'clock Eastern time yesterday, we got news through the Steelers organization of the passing of Dan Rooney. And so much has been said and written. It was kind of a jarring, you know, anything like this, even though Mr. Rooney at age 84 looked a bit frail. Anytime you hear this news with this type of news for anybody without any warning, it's jarring type of stuff. And I was just getting on the air with my show. And you try and come up with I tried to come up with the right words to, you know, express kind of what Dan Rooney has meant. Not just to the Pittsburgh Steelers, but to the city of Pittsburgh, more importantly, I think, and what the Steelers have meant under the Rooney stewardship, really, since Art bought the team back in 1933. And we saw, you know, tons of stuff on the NFL Network last night, this morning on Mike and Mike. We've seen, you know, various people come on and talk about Mr. Rooney, and I did the best I could yesterday to talk about it. And you were on the show with me and had a chance to, you know, share a few thoughts. But obviously, you know, I know I speak for you in our sympathies and respects to the Rooney family. Dan was an incredible man, and what he did in terms of driving the foundation of the Steelers that we know today over the last 50 years of the model franchise, a winning franchise, and a franchise that people in Pittsburgh could identify with and were incredibly proud to identify with. It was pretty special stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And boy, when if people have already know quite a bit about Dan Rooney over the years and the history and all, but to have all this come pouring back in at you in literally a period of, 6 to 8 hours here with all these stories, you know, immediately after it happened. And, of course, a lot of these other notable major media guys are writing things that are being released this morning. It just – you look on Twitter and you see how all other 31 teams have reacted to the news, current and former players chiming in on Twitter, players, heck, even Vontaze Burfict, had a very positive tweet on Twitter about the passing of Dan Rooney. So it really goes to show you the reach that this man had, not only with the Steelers organization, which he should, obviously, but league-wide. And I think Peter King, if anybody hasn't read it yet, Peter King wrote a nice piece, a great piece on SI entitled Dan Rooney and an Appreciation of the Steelers Icon. One of the early quotes from that article: there was no owner better than Dan Rooney, maybe ever, at combining the good of the game with the good of his team. And I think that really speaks volumes right there. And Dan, obviously, you know, had 84 great years on this earth. David, can you imagine what that man has seen and witnessed, not only Steelers-wise, but league-wide throughout his life? And, you know, instead of kind of mourning his death today, we really should probably be celebrating it.
Yeah, well said. And look, you know, one of the things that I tried to emphasize yesterday is, you know, when I grew up in, you know, my kind of remembering time of the early 70s, Pittsburgh was a city in transition during the 70s. And People are well aware of, I think certainly if you grew up here around my age, you're well aware of the displacement that took place as, you know, entire towns, Uniontown being one and many others along the Mon. Unemployment, you know, was as much as 50 or 60% in some of these areas because the steel industry in the United States was no longer able to compete with the mini mills that were developed in different places and then what was going on in South Korea and Japan. And it was tough times. It was tough times for Pittsburgh. And what a lot of people, you know, identified with their sports teams and the Steelers became something that everybody could identify with because everybody loves to hold on to, you know, being identified with a winner. And that's just certainly what the Steelers were. And more than anything, in terms of how they won, what they embodied was toughness. And I think the city, if it hadn't already, it took its identity from that. And, you know, Pittsburgh was this tough city. And, you know, you and I, Dave, on this show for 7 years now, we've talked so many times about people all over the country being Steeler fans. And certainly, you know, we always have the laugh about when the Steelers play on the road, the announcers always talk about Steeler fans traveling well. Well, they certainly travel well. But the bigger thing here that's often missed is there are Steeler fans everywhere. In every city, you know, around the country and around the globe. And we, you know, you and I are privileged enough through this, you know, small podcast to interact with some of these people and to hear from some of these people. But a lot of these people, two things happened. One is people in Pittsburgh, they had to leave Pittsburgh because there weren't jobs here. And so they went different places. And their kids who grew up had a connection to Pittsburgh. And we see that, you know, countless times we've heard those stories. And then the other thing is just people around the, you know, the country when you're young and if you didn't have your own team or in your case, you know, you wanted to be kind of the rebellious son and root for a team that your dad wasn't rooting for. You find a team that's winning and the Steelers were a winning type of team. And the culture and I don't know what the right words are obviously here, but the culture that Dan Rooney built, the rapport that he had with players was amazing. And one of the things you'll see, people will see around the internet today is, as you said, all these different testaments from different players and two guys who just, they jump off the page to me as guys that I feel like Dan had as good a relationship with anybody are Ike Taylor and Antonio Brown. And if you think about who Dan Rooney is, you know, a patriarch of not just the Steelers, really a patriarch of Pittsburgh, a man, you know, an Irish by descent, a man living on the North Side, grew up, you know, went to North Catholic, and he certainly wasn't a hardscrabble life, but a tough young man who played quarterback at North Catholic and lived a very humble life. But, you know, when you think about that, you think about who Antonio Brown and Ike Taylor are. And, you know, we've talked about those guys for years now. They're not coming from similar backgrounds. And yet Dan Rooney, the relationship, you always saw it with Ike. You see it with AB all the time. There was a special bond there. And we just the stories you'll hear from Steeler players, the Brian Blankenship story, the Tony Dungy story, guys from all walks of life, all levels of, you know, socioeconomic background, all different identities, they all related to Dan Rooney. And it's as you say, a life well led. And, you know, if we should all be so lucky to leave anything remotely close to kind of the legacy and relationships that that Dan was able to foster.
Yeah, you know, going back to that excerpt from what Peter King had to write, that there was no owner better than Dan Rooney, maybe ever, at combining the good of the game with the good of his team. I immediately, and really any time when I think about anecdotes, you know, related to Dan Rooney, it's weird, and maybe it's because my fascination with the salary cap on top of the Steelers. I keep going back to what happened with Will Wolford many, many years ago. You know, and really a time, you know, that as far as I think I remember the Steelers being over the salary cap and being penalized from it. Many people don't know the story. Will Wolford you know, had kind of a bonus, a clause in his contract related to what, you know, whether or not he played tackle or guard. And the Steelers needed cap space, and I think it was 1998, if I'm not mistaken, right around in there. They needed some cap space, and they asked, as the story goes, they asked Wolford to remove that clause from his contract to help him out salary cap wise. Now, Bob Labriola tells a little bit different story of how all that went down. In fact, I believe Bob Labriola said that when the contract was typed up, being as there were no computers in those days, that bonus was omitted in error. And when the Steelers needed Will Wolford to fill in left tackle because of injuries during the 1998 season, Dan Rooney went ahead and paid the bonus because he had given Wolford his word that he would. And because the bonus wasn't in the original contract, the NFL, you know, it ended up being, it put the Steelers over the salary cap, and the NFL docked the Steelers a third round pick in 2001 as a result. And, you know, I obviously, you know, at that time, you know, you weren't reading stuff online, and, you know, at least I wasn't as religiously as obviously I am now. But Rooney went on and self-reported that to the league. There was a lot of investigations going on into possible salary cap breaches around the league at the time, if I remember. And Rooney was like, look, you know, we violated this, and it was a result of me giving, you know, Will Wolford my word at the time. And even though the Steelers probably didn't, you know, could have gotten away with not paying those bonuses related, you know, that's just a small little one story, David, about what I've, you know, the compassion and the fairness that I think gets associated with Dan Rooney. Like I said, I'm not sure why that one thing is the thing that sticks out for me. Obviously, it'll be different story or anecdote for other people, but I'm sure everybody has their own.
Yeah, and I'll just tell a quick one as well. You know, the Pittsburgh, the author Steelers Takeaway, it's a great book that has like 400 different stories about things. And Brian Blankenship tells the story how in the fourth game of the season against the Patriots, he injured his neck, and this is 1991. And on the following Monday, he went to Joe Maroon's office for the doctor for an MRI. And later that morning, he found out that it was severe enough that his NFL career was coming to an end. He couldn't play anymore. So he called his agent, told him the news, and his agent asked him if he'd signed his new contract that had verbally been agreed to on Saturday, literally the day before the New England game. Blankenship told his agent that he hadn't signed it. And the agent said, get over there and sign it before they find out about the injury. And Blankenship said that, yeah, I told him I was going to go see Dan Rooney before I sign anything. And he knocked on Mr. Rooney's door and told him about the prognosis. And that, he said, Mr. Rooney said, Dan said he was very kind, and he praised me for my short 5-year career. He said that he was sorry and he'd do whatever he could to make sure he was okay. And then he asked me about the new contract and told me the deal was agreed to on Saturday and I should get my butt across the hall and get it taken care of. Pretty good.
Absolutely. I think one word that, if down the road, if someone asks you to describe Dan Rooney in one word, you know, fair is the first thing that comes to the top of my head. So, we lost a one of the few remaining links to the old NFL as well. So, you know, like we just didn't lose the chairman of the Steelers. We lost, literally a link to the past and the original NFL. And, hopefully people learned enough from him to help, you know, carry on this league. And, you know, I think Art Rooney does a great job, and he obviously knows how his father ran things and how his grandfather ran things. So I think we're in good hands moving forward, but there'll never be another Dan Rooney, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's hard to be a pioneer these days in virtually anything. I mean, certainly he was in the NFL, and, you know, his legacy will live on many ways, the Rooney Rule being one obvious one. And, you know, going forward and hiring Mike Tomlin, one of the things I said yesterday, and I think this is one of the singular traits to be a great executive, and it doesn't matter the business, is to be able to hire great people and allow them to do their job. And we have seen that from the Rooney family, from Dan and Art, since they've taken control of the team. And it's, you know, that's, you know, when people, we sit here, Dave, you and I sit here and listen to people, you know, fire Dick LeBeau, fire, you know, just go through the list. Every coordinator who's ever existed and go work your way up to the head coach, you know, fire Mike Tomlin. They lose a couple of games, fire Mike Tomlin. It's just not the way the Steelers do things. And oftentimes when people talk about the Steeler way, they mock it like it's, you know, this thing to be laughed at because they try to do the right thing. Certainly when you manage – when you manage somewhere at different times between 60 to 90 young men between the age of 20 and 40, not every one of them is going to do the right thing. And yeah, you can laugh at times at kind of some of the things that have happened at the Steelers and mock that, but it's a noble thing to try and do things the right way. And as you said, to be honest and fair about it. And there's no question that's what the Steelers have tried to do. And that, you know, I think that all starts with Dan Rooney. So, you know, again, it's as you say, a life to be celebrated. It would be interesting to see if the Rooney family decides to have any kind of public ceremonial or kind of way for people to pay their respects. So we'll see how that goes out over the next day or two.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you hit on something. I've always admired the fact that the way the Steelers do things. I love hearing from general manager Kevin Colbert, you know, after the season's over and leading up. You know, you only hear from Colbert and Art Rooney and used to be Dan Rooney only after the season was over. You know, they weren't, you know, I'm sure a lot of discussions went on behind closed doors during the season and all like that, but that's the way it's meant to be with that kind of stuff. They put the people in place to do the job that they want them to do, and they let them do their jobs. You know, you don't have I don't want to take a shot at Jerry Jones here, but I mean, it seems like after every game, Jerry Jones is out in the hallway giving his own press conferences, you know, to the media and all like that. And, you know, other organizations, you'll see the general managers throughout the season comment on things. You hired a guy to do a job. Let him do his job, and then everybody can discuss it, you know, after the season's over. And that's one of the things I've always admired about, you know, the way the Steelers handle their business. And obviously with that will probably continue moving forward. And plus it leads to more anticipation, I think, on top of that. Oh, the season's over. We finally get to hear from Kevin Colbert. We finally get to hear from Art or Dan or those kind of things. Now, obviously, you would hear, you know, from Art or Dan whenever something, you know, like the UPMC or the Joe Green jersey retirement and those kind of things, and that's great. But outside of that, you know, they were always, you know, and Dan specifically, always good about letting his people do their jobs.
Yeah, he is, and the Rooney family is going to receive friends 2-7 Monday at Heinz Field. So his life will be celebrated with a mass at 11 a.m. on Tuesday. I'm just kind of figuring how this works into my schedule. So there you have it. And I'm sure there'll be more details about that. Okay. So Dave, that was the, you know, that was the, as I say, jarring news. For those who have physically seen Mr. Rooney, you'll know Gene Collier wrote about this in the Post-Gazette that he had, you know, basically whatever, you know, he had a spinal degenerative issue with his spine. So he was, in his later life, he was walked with his head down. And Gene wrote, Gene's going to join me today at 5 on my show, but he wrote a great story about how, you know, you see him out there next to practice and talked about him being vulnerable. And he said, you know, going back to the days, he's been on the sideline since he was 5 years old and the different stages that he's gone through, and just talked about how, you know, now that he's gone, you know, we're all vulnerable because that era, as you say, Dave, there are not many guys left tied to that original, you know, kind of the leadership of the NFL as it has transitioned. So, yeah, You know, did you get a chance to catch any of the highlights last night on the NFL Network? I mean, all stuff that we've all kind of lived through and seen, but fun to see some of it again, particularly some of the early Super Bowls for me.
Oh yeah, and I have a lot, you know, all this stuff on tape, but it's all I always enjoy the quick rush of all that stuff when they throw it right at you. You know,
in half-hour vignettes, too, because it's very digestible. You know, you get all the good stuff.
Right, they let you binge on it, if you will. You know, it's like you hear all these people and you're binging on these Netflix shows. Look, if it's not sports, David, I got to be honest. There's only a few things. You know, hockey, baseball, football. Never a big basketball fan. You know, those three things will always have my attention. And a lot of people don't know, but you know, maybe during the off season I get some time. I love watching old war and you know, Vietnam War and World War II documentaries and that kind of stuff. That kind of, you know, those things always fascinate me. So obviously anytime the NFL Network's willing to allow me to binge on stuff like that, and they'll be doing so, from my understanding, the next several days as well, in honor of the passing of Dan Rooney, you can bet for sure I'm right there. The thing about Collier real quick, how did he put it? He says, I'll no longer worry about Dan Rooney on the sideline. I'll worry about everybody else.
Worry about us, right.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, Steeler fans, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, just contact our buddy Craig Oxhead. Craig's at First Advantage Mortgage. He's a lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native, nationally recognized lender that loved the opportunity to help out our listeners. You can call Craig today, 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com, or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. About as easy as it gets to remember that. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave. Other topics in the NFL. You know, obviously this is the quiet time going into the draft, and, you know, people are – Now we get to the, you know, who was the coach? I was trying to remember who the coach was last year as they moved the draft back and they had more and more time. Was it Sean Payton who just said, you know, my guys are starting to question their questions. They're sitting there, you know, looking for things that maybe, you know, they're overanalyzing things and decided to take everybody to Vegas for a weekend. Was it Payton or somebody did that last year? Just remembering that. But, you know, we're at that time now where, yeah, I imagine teams have done virtually all the work. They're going to have the last few visits here over the next week. And then, you know, we're in within 2 weeks now. That day can't come soon enough.
Yeah, absolutely. The pre-draft visits, I think I can't remember what the deadline this year for pre-draft visits is. This coming Monday or this coming Wednesday, but obviously it's closing in. The Steelers only have a handful left to bring in, and you know, one would think a lot of those are potentially going to happen today to round their stuff up. Yeah, I mean, I will give the NFL this though, David. You know, since the season has ended, things seem to be moving. They keep the calendar stretched out just enough that it seems like all of this has moved along fairly quickly, to be quite, in my opinion, moved along fairly quickly. Do you not feel the same? It just feels like it has flowed on this NFL calendar. And Lord knows the NFL likes to stay in the news cycle as well. Maybe it's because this is all I do. But I felt it's moved along fairly nicely, and there's never really been a quote-unquote dead period. That we're rest assured after the draft takes place and after the first OTAs, I mean, that 3 to 4 week gap in between mandatory mini camp and the start of training camp is going to be absolutely brutal. But otherwise, I think they moved things along fairly well.
Yeah, I'd prefer they move the draft up a couple weeks and have it, you know, this weekend. Then we can, you know, put things on the back burner for a bit. But you know, they're managing the clock the way they want to manage it. So we talked yesterday, Dave, on my show about something that I wanted to see. Speaking of these pre-draft visits, and you did some work on, kind of trying to assess what percentage of the draft picks each year end up coming for a visit. And obviously the pre-draft visit is not the only time the Steelers have an opportunity to meet with players. They can do so at the combine. They meet, you know, 60 guys at the combine. So you have that. You have the pro days where they could certainly get in touch with guys. And so there are ample opportunities. But you had done some, I thought, very good stuff on that to give us a sense of it. So why don't you hit that for us?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the list that I cobbled together for your show yesterday, I've already dumped. I had to do a Windows update there and don't have it in front of me, but I know I can rattle off a lot of these names just by looking at the past drafts. And, of course, we're talking about the players that were brought in for pre-draft visitors that were ultimately selected by the team. You go back to last year, you had guys like Sean Davis, Javon Hargrave, and Gerald Hawkins were all brought in for pre-draft visits and ultimately drafted. The year before that, Cinquez Golson, Sammy Coates, and Duran Grant, I believe, were all brought in for pre-draft visits, ultimately drafted by the team. I don't remember specifically if Jesse James was brought in or not, but I mean, obviously a Penn State guy, they knew a lot about him. The year before that, Ryan Shazier, Stephon Tuitt, Martavis Bryant, I believe Shaquille Richardson, Jordan Zumwalt, I believe, it seems like I remember him being brought in, and I think Rob Blanchflower as well, too. So if you want to look at one specific year when a team really drafted a large number of players that were brought in for pre-draft visits, it was 2014. You go to 2013, Jarvis Jones, Shamarco Thomas, Terry Hawthorne, I believe Justin Brown and Vince Williams also brought in for pre-draft visits that year. 2012, Mike Adams obviously ended up visiting with the team that year. I believe Tony Clemens, I believe three of their four seventh round draft picks that year were brought in for visits. Tony Clemens.
Yeah, Kelvin Beachum.
David Paulson and Kelvin Beachum brought in. You go back a year before that, I remember Marcus Gilbert, I believe Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen were brought in. I can't remember if he was or not. I remember Keith Williams, though. Remember the guard out of Nebraska drafted in the sixth round? He was brought in for a pre-draft visit. And now that I see Baron Batch's name on here, I remember him being brought in for a visit, too, because there was a story about Baron Batch and Curtis Brown being brought in and talking to each other about one hawk and the other one down after an interception in there. So Baron Batch, you know, another year, 2011, where a lot of those guys were brought in. You could just go, I mean, 2010, some guy named Antonio Brown was brought in for a pre-draft visit that year, as was Emmanuel Sanders, who was drafted, and Marquise Pouncey that year as well, too. So we could go, you know, we could continually go all the way back probably to 2000 and have these lists. And I think on average, you know, I think you could say 3 to 4 guys, David, that, you know, if they were brought in for a pre-draft visit, you look at that list of 30, there's a good chance 3 or 4 of those guys are going to end up being drafted this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen, I think the one of the more interesting things you pointed out to me yesterday was how few running backs have been brought in. And I don't know that tells us one way or the other. As I've said many times, I expect the Steelers to go running back kind of within their first 4 picks. So, I thought that was at least noticeable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things that when you look at this list and look, tight end is another thing. If we were forced to put money down here several weeks ago saying the Steelers are going to draft a tight end or running back, I think a pretty good chance I would have laid down money on both those positions being addressed. But as you stated, when you look at the list so far, James Conner, who, by the way, that doesn't really count against your – I mean, why wouldn't you bring in James Conner? It's a local visit. It doesn't count against your 30. Yeah, we'll see what happens with the final few names here, but he's the only running back so far. When you talk about tight ends, they now have only brought in 2 of them. One of them, Scott Orndorff, out of Pittsburgh, a local visit, a kid that, you know, if he doesn't get drafted late, more probably going to wind up, to be quite honest with you, being an undrafted kid. And this past week, they brought in Jason Crooms out of Tennessee for a pre-draft visit out of nowhere. This is another kid that's probably not going to hear his name called on draft day. So, in other words, you know, we probably, you know, the O.J. Howards, the David Njoku's, the Evan Ingram's, the Gerald Everett's, you know, these top guys in the first two or three rounds, you know, and you look at the pro day visits and everything that goes, it just doesn't look like the Steelers have interest in adding a tight end until possibly maybe later as undrafted. And really, with running backs, we'll see, because it doesn't really look like there's a lot of interest in running backs. And, oh, yeah, I'm not sure if you saw D'Angelo Williams really hasn't kind of – if you saw a tweet of his a few days ago, it doesn't sound like he's kind of ruled out the possibility of him re-signing with the team just yet either. And he's a pretty straightforward, you know, cut-to-the-chase kind of guy, if you will.
Well, I'm sure if he had the opportunity to re-sign with the team, he would have done so. So I don't think that has been afforded him yet. And I think, you know, we've talked about this, you know, the Landry Jones situation. The Steelers went and got the deal done with Landry Jones, but Bruce Gretkowski last year was kind of, let's see what happens in the draft. They didn't do anything in the draft, so they re-signed Gretkowski. So that's the way D'Angelo Williams is going to get a contract, is if the Steelers don't do anything in the draft, which, you know, of course, I expect them to do. So we will see how that plays out. On the tight end, you know, we've seen some reports here this week that have been, you know, I don't know if they're accurate or not, like, you know, Ben going in and saying, you know, get me another tight end. I can't imagine that happened. I just, you know, I'd be shocked if it kind of went down like that. I'm sure Ben is always lobbying for, you know, more is better, right? You know, get us some more guys. But we saw a report come out that Kevin Colbert loves Jabril Peppers. The Steelers love Jabril Peppers. The next time Kevin Colbert tells somebody he loves a player will be the first. I promise you that. He may have said to somebody, you know, yeah, you know how Kevin talks. We've all heard him talk enough. Kevin Colbert's not throwing around platitudes like we love players going into the NFL draft. Just absolutely not a direct quote from Kevin Colbert. So, you know, take a lot of the stuff you see here being attributed to the organization or to players in the organization with a grain of salt. It's that time of year. So,
David, I'd like to tell you that I love Kate Hudson, but
right. I believe you.
And there's no chance, though, I'm going to be able to draft Kate Hudson, if you know what I mean. But I mean, look, Aditi. Poor Aditi isn't batting. Her batting average has slipped lately, hasn't it? And I love Aditi. I have conversations with Twitter all the time. I talk to her with direct messages, you know, throughout the season. But right now, with the Ben wants a tight end and Kevin Colbert, obviously we don't know if she's right or wrong about Jabril Peppers. But you know, we'll find out here in 2 weeks whether or not, you know, that's the right pick. And look, you know, a lot of people have mocked Jabril Peppers to the Steelers, but when you look at Jabril Peppers and you know, it goes without saying the Steelers were at the Michigan Pro Day, but Jabril Peppers is a guy that doesn't, you know, that doesn't have a lot of college experience at one particular position. He's a jack of all trades, master of none. Where was his production at Michigan? Okay. Oh yeah.
Punt returner.
Yeah. I mean, punt returner, basically. Yeah. You know, he was a good defensive player.
He's a good player.
But only one interception. And look, I understand he played the 2016 season at linebacker, but, you know, 2015 he was in a defensive backfield as well. I mean, the kid played some running back and looked to him. He might be one of the, if his true position was running back, he might be a top five running back in this year's class if that was, you know, his true position, because he had a lot of success there. In limited playing time. I guess what I'm trying to say is, man, just not enough there, in my opinion. Not enough boxes checked for him to be the Steelers' first-round draft pick this year. But time will obviously tell. And David Watts, fresh on my mind, and while we have talked about pre-draft visitors and all, I assume that we're going to have the annual Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert non-information gleaning press conference, pre-draft press conference here pretty soon. But you know one thing that I don't think anybody ever asked, though, you know, during those, and I hope you go, and I hope you're the one that asked this, is to have Kevin Colbert tell us exactly the pro days that he did attend this year. Now, obviously, we can track Kevin Colbert, and we might very well have all the places where he showed up, but what if there's one or two places that he slipped through the cracks and didn't get reported? While it was fresh on my mind, I hope that if you do go to that press conference, that's one of the questions that you ask Kevin Colbert. Hey, Kevin, can you tell us what pro days you attended this year?
Yeah, I wonder if Kevin would be able to, if he didn't have a list in front of him, I wonder if he'd have that, if he'd know off the top of his head, be able to rail off 15 in a row. How about our man Dean Blandino stepping down from the NFL to go take a television job, probably with CBS, to be there, Mike Pereira?
Well, more money is better than lesser money, right?
Obviously. Look, I mean, it was a pretty thankless job that he had. I thought he did a reasonably good job of communicating. I mean, obviously people look at him as the mouthpiece for the calls they didn't like. So nobody's looking for Dean Blandino when things go their way. They're only looking for Dean Blandino when things don't go their way. So that's, all things considered, I think he did a reasonable job. Interestingly, you say, okay, go ahead, name people in the NFL front office. Okay, Roger Goodell, you got one. Name a second. Dean Blandino. Okay, you got two. Name a third.
Greg Ayala.
Yeah, right. That's it. You're not getting anybody. You're not getting anybody else.
I thought he did a good job as well too. Now look, I'll be the first when I think there's a discrepancy on a replay or a no call or something along those lines to write a post about it. But I thought we saw during, I guess you could call it, Dean Blandino's administration, if you will, a lot more transparency. I mean, he was on NFL Network every week, right? Going over the key calls, and you go to the operations site, the NFL's operations site, and the videos up there once a week, and the point of emphasis, and that kind of thing. So yeah, look, it's a thankless job, right? And a lot of stress and pressure on there. And obviously, it sounds like to me he's going to get more money outside with a lot less pressure taking the Mike Pereira route. And why wouldn't you? I feel sorry for the next guy now, but especially with all of these replays going to be run through the New York headquarters now. To my understanding, I thought he did fine.
Yeah. Okay, I'm trying to think if in terms of big picture stuff, if we got anything else. Why don't we talk about the guys who came in yesterday? Because the kid who ran the 4.28, we had a couple corners come in yesterday. We've seen defensive backs kind of roll through. Anybody stand out in terms of interesting names for you?
Yeah, let's take it from 4.11 on. Tim Williams, the troubled edge rusher out of Alabama.
And let me just throw my thought on Tim Williams. For those who don't know, he's had the possession and the firearms possession before the season last year. Apparently, failed a bunch of drug tests. The thing that shocked me most about what I've seen about Tim Williams, who was probably considered a mid first round pick at some point in this whole process, is when Todd McShay did his mock yesterday, where he was playing GM for all 30 teams, not where he thought guys would go. He was playing, best pick for all 30 teams. He had him going about 100th overall, which would be, third round comp pick, dropping all the way, out of the, biggest faller on the board just about. So that was interesting to see. If he's there at one, Dave, do you consider him?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. If he's there at two, you might.
But let me tell you this. He's got some good pass rushing tape.
If he's there at 62,
it's one of those ones. Like, I don't think he's going to be the pick, David, the first round pick. But if he was, I'm interested. I'm not going to be throwing stuff, I don't think. The reason I don't think he's going to be the pick, it goes far past what he does on the field, if you get what I'm saying. You know, he just doesn't check a lot of character boxes. He was primarily a pass rusher at Alabama, didn't play against the run very much. But if you look at his tape, he's got some true raw pass rushing ability along with some counters as well too. And if anybody, he was on Moving the Chains a couple of days ago after his visit with Pittsburgh. I had that interview transcribed and kind of added in my own thoughts on Tim Williams there. So back to kind of what you added on there, if he's there in the second round, the Steelers like to take chances on some of these second round picks, right? I mean, go back to Mike Adams and a few others here. You know, they like those kind of questionable guys. So if Tim Williams was there in the second, I could possibly see them pulling the trigger. But what's interesting, and I wrote this up yesterday, David, the Steelers have not drafted a player out of Alabama since DeShay Townsend in 98. Now, is that just a coincidence? With them, because I mean, let's face it, Alabama produces the top three round guys year in, year out, and the Steelers haven't drafted one. So interesting guy there in Tim Williams. Now Tano Passignon out of Villanova, defensive end that some people think, I mean, big kid too. What is he like, 6'5", 6'6"? Some people say pass rushing defensive end. Some people think he can play on his feet as a 3-4, outside linebacker. He was brought in on the 11th. The Steelers have had a lot of seemingly interest in him, dating back all the way back, combine and before, I think. So definitely a guy to watch. And, we talked about, David, I don't know if you saw me write about this earlier in the week about Steelers and defensive linemen in the draft. You go back to some of those early conversations that you and I had, and my reaction to the Steelers drafting a defensive lineman went something like, no way, hell no, not going to happen. Well, I slowly bent into saying, okay, maybe sixth or seventh round. Don't be surprised now if the Steelers take it's the corner I'm in now. Don't be surprised if maybe a third or fourth round pick maybe goes to a guy like I'm drawing a blank, Chris Wormley out of Michigan, or a guy like Tano Passignon out of Villanova. I think if you go back and you start connecting the dots and go back to what Art Rooney said about needing to be able to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks, that's not only outside linebackers, even though we all know they're going to draft one. I think you connect some of these dots, I think there's a possibility. Moving forward, Jalen Myrick, a cornerback out of Minnesota, maybe a second day type guy was brought in. Keon Adams, an edge rusher out of Western Michigan, a guy that's probably going to be a seventh rounder or undrafted. Rasul Douglas out of West Virginia. Carnell Lake was at his pro day recently. A guy that checks a lot of boxes outside of maybe that 40-yard dash time and a few other of his measurables, a mid-round cornerback process. We already talked about the tight end Crooms out of Tennessee. And then yesterday, David, they brought in wide receiver Mac Hollins out of North Carolina, wide receiver Shelton Gibson out of West Virginia, both kind of mid-draft guys, if you will. They brought in Marlon Humphrey. This is a guy, David, I think that we're not talking enough about.
Yep.
Marlon Humphrey out of Alabama. We could probably poll 10 of our listeners right now. Seven of them will say no way Humphrey's on the board still for the Steelers when they draft 30th overall. The other three will probably say maybe there's a decent shot, that he is. If Marlon Humphrey is on the board at 30th overall, he's got a lot of boxes checked when it comes to being the Steelers pick. So Maybe that's the guy we should be talking a little bit more about. Ryan Lewis, a cornerback out of the University of Pittsburgh, was brought in for a visit. And then, oh, yeah, Obi Melifonwu, who also has a safety out of UConn, who has a ton of boxes checked except for one big one and that we can tell, and that being was Kevin Colbert at the UConn Pro Day. And I can't find any instance of that happening. And that's a big box to have to check when it comes to Melifonwu. But boy, what an intriguing guy that you want to talk about. You want a guy that can come on and play, you know, that could be your future starter at safety, can immediately be, I mean, basically this is 2017 version of Sean Davis, maybe, you know, athletically, very athletically gifted, blew it out of the park, you know, at the combine with the measurable tape. Oh yeah, the tape's not bad either.
Yeah, his obviously, you talk about the guys who I think you probably agree with me, Dave. The two guys who, and it's easier for defensive players to rise up the draft board than offensive players, because offensive players, you see the skill sets. It's just much more readily available to everybody's eyes before they do the tape work. You have a good understanding of players, so you don't see them move quite as much. You'll see some for sure, but I can't prove this, but it feels to me that defensive guys, and it's two guys in these schools. It's Hassan Reddick at Temple and this Obi at UConn are the guys who've driven, you know, jumped up draft boards. And you could argue that Aaron Donald was that guy at Pitt, largely based on his work on the field his senior year. He probably came into his senior year as a fourth round pick, somewhere around there. By the end of his senior year, he was a first round pick, and then he jumped up in the first round after the Senior Bowl and everything else he did in the post-season type stuff. But those two guys, I would think, you know, Reddick was seen as a kind of maybe a second or third round pick. Now a lot of people have him go in middle of the first round, and it's not clear whether everybody would look at him as an inside guy or an outside guy. And Obi, with his, you know, he was a second day guy, maybe. And now, you know, he's going to be back in the first round or second day pick.
Yeah, you want to go back and look, you know, if you want to talk measurables and these spark scores that have been around for several years now, you know, Obi Melifonwu is one of these kids that knocked it out of the park. I mean, when it comes
to, you can't do better. You really
right. And another kid the Steelers haven't shown interest in is, if they don't get a guy like Melifonwu, David, Josh Jones out of North Carolina State. You want to talk about a kid that checks a lot of boxes as well. You know, when it comes in and Steelers, you go back and look at these past drafts, David. David, you talk about when we look at pre-draft visits and the relationship to those. You go look at some of these high spark scores too with some of these kids. There's reason to believe that, you know, some of these guys are, you know, they could be the pick. When you look at Marlon Humphrey, a guy that we just talked about, David, 128. Spark score when it comes to cornerbacks. Jalen Myrick, a guy that they brought in for a pre-draft visit, 129.8. These are guys that are high spark number guys that you really, you know, I think you got to really consider. If Marlon Humphrey, David, the cornerback out of Alabama, is on the board at 30th,
I'd have no problem with him at 30. No,
I think he might be the pick, David. I really do. And, you know, you asked me on your show yesterday which way I'm kind of leaning. You know, they've had a lot of interest in Derek Rivers, T.J. Watt, Carl Lawson, the kid out of UCLA. You can just go down the list of, you know, Taco Charlton. Go down the list of these edge rushers. A lot. There's just so many in this draft class, David, that one of these guys, a good one, is going to fall into the second round. And if I had to place a bet right now, it would be a defensive back, either a cornerback or a safety. And if you get a safety, it's going to be one that's going to probably play in the slot for you and match up against some of these tight ends. In round one, it's going to be one, you know, that position group. And then round two, the best remaining edge rusher, you know.
Right, Rivers or whoever it is.
Right, and boy, you want to talk about if this draft went, let's say it went Marlon Humphrey and or Obi Melifonwu, and then Derek Rivers in round two. Oh man, you want to talk about Christmas in April? That would be a dream scenario. And if you look at a guy like Derek Rivers, and you look at the guys, you know, outside of us YouTube scouts, you know, several of us YouTube scouts think Derek Rivers is a, you know, should probably be a slam dunk first round guy. But then you have the McShays and these other guys that really have Rivers as a round three guy. Well, what's the average between those two? Round two. If they get Derek Rivers in the second round, Steeler fans should be doing backflips, and especially if they get one of these uber athletic spark defensive backs in round one.
Hard to argue with any of that. It will be interesting if they think there are. You know, the question is, do people think there are more high-level corners or high-level edge rushers? And I've seen people argue both sides, that there's more depth at corner. And so does one or the other lead you one way or the other with that first pick if they're going to go those two positions with their first two picks? So it's just going to be, you know, this is a situation, again, where, you know, we can all talk about – I think we've debunked the best athlete available thing. It's, you know, the best athlete available at a position of need. So let's just say that. And so you take the one who's there. If, you know, if Marlon Humphrey, you say he's better than any of these edge guys, well, then obviously you go there and you hope that, you know, somebody you don't expect falls. Or, you know, if they, for whatever reason, so pick a guy who's projected, some people project in the middle of the first round, like Tack McKinley, who came in for a visit. You say, you know, we didn't expect him to be there at 30. We take him, and we'll take, you know, the kid from Minnesota, the corner there, you know, later, you know, in the second round of the Rasul Douglas or who, you know, whoever it is on their board. So it's what makes it fun. We get to speculate on all of it.
You want to talk about spark kings. How about Kevin King out of Washington, man?
He's another one. We haven't talked a lot about him. We've talked probably more about Sidney Jones, who, you know, again, if he's sitting there in the third round, sign me up for taking him.
You want to talk, you know, we always like to kid about this planet, you know, the planet theory when it comes to some of these players. Right, you know, right. Obi Melifonwu and Kevin King are planet theory type guys. I mean, there's only so many people walking this earth that are, you know, 6'3", 200 pounds that run to 40 and jump and change your direction and those kind of things. So, once again, you know, is Kevin Colbert, by all, you know, we don't know for sure, I don't think. I think we got a good idea that Kevin Colbert was not at the Washington Pro Day. That obviously was at, you know, the Pro Day where the kid
Sidney Jones.
Yeah, Sidney Jones suffered his Achilles injury as well, too. You know, if we had that one last check mark that we could put in that box with guys like King and Obi Melifonwu, and who knows, maybe we can't, but I mean, that's what really keeps a few of us, you know, talking like Alex and me and a few of those other guys, from really putting him as a slam dunk leader in the clubhouse you know, kind of guy when it comes to being a first round pick. So I think when you look at this list overall, you know, the pre-draft list, I hate to keep going back to a guy like Marlon Humphrey, but I think he's a guy that could be a leader in the clubhouse right now because of the fact, you know, and that is if he's on the board. And once again, you know, I'm with you with what you said. I don't think the Steelers have – I think the Steelers have it narrowed down to probably four or five guys that they think they're going to be there. And I think these players probably play, you know, corner, safety, edge rusher more than likely. And if one of, you know, they just start scratching those names off the list after they come off the board, and, you know, that's going to be your guy. So I think they probably got it narrowed down that far. And yeah, the final 2 weeks, we're going to have a lot of fun speculating even more. I'm going to try to effort Dave T again over the weekend, I think, and maybe either you and I or Alex and I can have him on the show on Monday to, you know, some last minute draft talk here.
Yeah, Steeler fans, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than figuring out who the Steelers are going to take in the first round. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Philadelphia, where the draft will be held this year. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave, I think we've covered most of it. There was one other thing I wanted to drop in here for you that is now it's just escaping me, so I'll opine on it next time.
Well, while you think about it, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do on the show, we try to do it two times a week during the off season, sometimes three, depending on what's going on. Obviously, during the season, we do it three times a week as well. If you like and want to donate to the cause, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donation button. Upper right navigational bar, they'll take you to PayPal so you can make a very secure donation as well. Hope everybody has a happy Good Friday today. A happy Easter on Sunday as well.
Yep, and thoughts are with the Rooney family and the Steelers organization. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.